Hello, welcome to Brain Injury Radio Network. Tonight is our regular Wednesday installment of our program Recovery Now with your host, Kim Justice. If you'd like to know more about my story, you can find it at inaflash.org. I too am a fellow traumatic brain injury survivor. I appreciate you tuning in tonight, and as always, I look forward to your input. So now, we'll get on with the show.
Welcome and happy hump night from somewhere in Middle America. This is your host, Kim. Recovery Now is a gathering place for anyone seeking recovery from the challenges of life on life's terms. I introduce topics and guests share their experience, strength, and hope. We discuss useful tools that have helped us lighten the load of our journey through recovery. More will be revealed. This is a we recovery program because it is in the we that we discover the new me. We focus on the four A's of recovery: awareness, acceptance, action, and adaptation. This is a place for survivors striving to become thrivers. Some nights we'll have a featured guest, like tonight. Others will introduce a topic of recovery, encouraging callers to join us in the discussion. The second part of the show is open mic and some great indie music sure to inspire. Join us every Wednesday at this time. All live episodes of Brain Injury Radio are immediately archived for free on-demand listening at your leisure. So you never have to be alone in your recovery like a lot of us out here, including my guest, have been. As most of you know, you can call into the show 424-243-9540 or toll-free in the U.S. 855-473-3711. Outside the U.S., toll-free 202-559-7907. Tonight I'm really excited because I have on a guest that you all have had a great response to, Dr. Maria Romanes, or just Maria, as she has us call her. But I do like to give you credit, Maria, for all of the things that you have accomplished both before and since your brain injury. So in any case, Maria's been on a couple of times, and she has such a wealth of knowledge. She's a staff pathologist at a Veterans Administration hospital and enjoys practices general surgical pathology and is fellowship trained in cytopathology. And she wrote, where I first came across Maria was reading something she wrote on MedPage Today in response to their ongoing 10 Questions series. And she just had such a wonderful perspective, and you can go back. In fact, I should have gone back. I apologize to our first show where you get her history, but Maria is also a survivor. In 1984, she was in a rollover motor vehicle accident, open fracture of the left temporal skull, emergent neurosurgery, 3-day coma, 30-minute retrograde amnesia, 7-day post-traumatic amnesia, and she was walking and talking at discharge. Other than plastic surgery, no follow-up or rehab was arranged, and her mother was simply told to push her gently. How many of us have heard that? At the time, and way too often, too frequently now, I'm hearing about people that, well, The fire, the immediate fire, is put out in the brain, but there's no discussion of chronic brain injury, the things that we have to deal with, the residuals we have to deal with in our day-to-day life after the initial crisis. Just doesn't come up, and so many of us are out there in the dark feeling around trying to find our way, and in too many places like where I'm from, there wasn't a support group then, and there's not now. And in 1995, certainly when Maria had hers in 84, computers weren't on every desk, and so the research wasn't as easily obtainable as it is now. And it made it really tough. A lot of us were, like I say, walking around out in the dark. But one of the things that a lot of us have a problem with, and that's what we're going to talk about tonight, and I'm having trouble with it right now, is our focus and our ability to pay attention or to keep our attention on one thing and to be able to focus. And that's what Maria's going to talk to us about tonight. And what, here we go, talk about focus. What she gave me, and she'll tell you a little more about Larry Schutz's PhD, but the quote I have is, attention is a mental control system that lets you adjust how hard you think about something. Because brain damage weakens attention, a good recovery depends on deliberately thinking a bit harder about many things. There is a special need to pay more attention to tasks as they get harder. Mental effort is also a self-therapy tool that can reduce or neutralize cognitive deficits. So powering up into maximum alertness and attention is the first step toward getting your deficits under control. When you power up, you can keep your mind focused on one topic at length, think deeply about it, and come up with your best plans and ideas. Making maximum effort sometimes offsets deficits completely, allowing survivors to function at full effectiveness. Wow. Now, to some of us, that sounds like a dream come true. But what about to Maria? Are you with us?
I am. Do you hear me?
I can hear you loud and clear. How you doing tonight, Maria?
I'm kind of tired, but I think that's every time I get on here, I'm kind of tired, am I not?
You are, and I promised, I want the audience to know ahead of time that I did promise you only needed to stay an hour tonight. You're on another time zone. You're real busy right now, and so I'm going to hold you to that because I want you to keep coming back, as does the audience. I always get such a wonderful response when you've been on the show and got a lot of comments on my posts last night and the last couple days about you coming on. So I'll hold up to my part of the bargain and we'll get right into the topic. And then if anybody has questions, we'll let them ask some questions. And if they don't get the opportunity, folks, I'll tell you what I tell you every time. And that's just that Maria is kind enough, gracious enough to be a regular with me. I think we've been doing this every 6 or 8 weeks. However, we can mutually arrange it in our schedules. So, she's going to tell us now how to focus and keep attention, and maybe you'll remember the questions that you have for her and write them down, and we'll have them next time if you don't have a chance to listen to them tonight. But about this attention and focus thing, I've been having a lot of problem with it lately, and it's because of what I termed full basket syndrome, too many things going on. And so I'm having a really hard time because I have a lot of different elements in my life. We just moved. My elderly grandmother is in the process of dying. My dad's Parkinson's has taken a sudden turn for the worse, and he's been hospitalized twice in the last couple of weeks. And I'm afraid there's going to be some tough decisions ahead. And then we had a catastrophe here at our new house when we had only been here 24 hours. A mainline pipe broke and caused a lot of damage to the renovation we had just done. We hadn't been here 24 hours. And so I've got this basket. Well, look at it like a fire, you know, another log, another log, another log, another log, and then it feels like somebody poured gas on it, and whew, and I am
maybe
having...
Maybe we should have done tonight on overwhelm and catastrophic reaction.
Well, you know, the thing about that so many of these things dovetail is that because of the over, in my case, and then we're going to broaden it out to what you, how you meant to talk about this topic. But when I was reading through this, I was thinking, wow, one time that is at least a real challenging time is when you've got a lot going on. It's really hard to focus. I mean, people are saying things to me, and I'm doing more and more of going, huh? What did you just say? And then I can't remember it, you know, a few minutes later. So some of my other residuals, like my short-term memory and my sensory overload and some other things that when I'm in a routine, my regular routine, and I'm doing the using the recovery tools that I'm accustomed to using regularly, I'm pretty stable. But, you know, my residuals really start to flare even after all this time, and attention and focus is one of the places that really get hit when there's too much going on, and especially things that I'm powerless over. You know, there's not really much I can do about these things except try to be there, and it's hard to be the one that's the strong one when you're the survivor and suddenly you're, you know, placed in a caregiver situation or a crisis situation. But it really puts that kind of thing in perspective. I'll say that, and then I'll let you talk about it. You know, it was a strange thing, and things like this happen in my life, realizations that, you know, the renovation that, you know, we had spent some money on and didn't last for 24 hours and all of that ugliness and deception that went on and ruined things. But then, you know, the next day my dad's in the hospital and it's either bad mix of medication or the disease has taken a turn for the worse. And it really puts things in perspective, I guess, that, you know, a lot of my problems are problems of luxury, I guess, and not quite the same weight the day that my dad went to the hospital as the day before, when it was just, you know, something that we should be really happy and excited about, and it was just like throwing the money in the street and watching it blow away, or literally go down the drain, I guess, if you want to try to, you got to find the humor in things too. But I didn't think it was very funny. But anyway, tonight we're here to talk about attention and focus, something that a lot of us have ongoing problems with in our recovery process. And you have some insight to share with us.
Okay, well, whatever insight I have to share, I kind of learned a lot of it from Dr. Larry Schutz. I want to give him credit for the material that we're going to talk about. But first of all, Kim, I just want to, you know, tell you that I really feel, I hope that your father gets, you know, you're able to find out what's going on with your father. Is he better now, or there's still problems?
No, he just went this morning and last week. And, you know, this is, I don't want to go off your topic, but, you know, there is something I'd like to talk to you about sometime. And I talked about this on my show the other night, so I don't want to wear people out. But, you know, when he went to the hospital last week, this was of grave concern to me because a neurologist came in, the guy who was on staff, not my dad's, but the guy doing the rounds, and he came in and he said that they were releasing him. He had just come in the day before, spent 11 hours in the emergency room, and they didn't ever come in. You know, when you've got a movement disorder and you can't move, it gets very painful and uncomfortable, and you can't move. And they knew why he was there, and they left him like 11 hours without coming in and moving him or trying to help in some way, make him be more comfortable. So he was in that position that long. They find him a room at 11 o'clock at night, and the next day at 4 in the afternoon, I happen to be there when the neurologist blows through and says they're going to be releasing him. And I'm sitting there looking.
That day at 4 o'clock, they're telling you.
Yeah, and at the end of the bed on the dry erase board, it says high fall risk, weakness, and something else. But here was the point that freaked me out a bit, scared me for our future and what's going on in the healthcare industry. And the neurologist, my mom really went crazy about it because, you know, when he has some of his symptoms, she's only 5'1" and she's also 73, and it's dead weight, you know, when they get foot freeze or start to fall. She can't get him up. It's getting to a bad place, you know, where she's not able to cope with the situation. And the doctor said, you know, my recommendation was to have him stay here for a couple days. But my decision was overridden. I forget how he termed it, but I'll term it. The doctor's decision was overridden by a bureaucrat pencil pusher in an ivory tower somewhere so far removed from the patient that person was determining the healthcare plan, not the doctor. And I think that's really scary.
That's a huge problem in medicine today.
Yeah, sure is.
The decision,
and he said, I'm just the neurologist, he says. I'm just the neurologist. And I'm sorry to interrupt. The end of it is I got up and I walked over. He said that Susan, unknown last name, was the person who made this decision. And I got up and I walked over to that dry erase with my phone camera, and I clicked off a couple pictures of the board where it said high fall risk and weakness. Oh, and the gait belt thing. I mean, just 5 minutes before, I watched two people with a gait belt help him to get into the restroom, and they were discharging him from the hospital, a pencil pusher. And I said, well, tell Susan, I hope she's not too short-sighted on trying to save the hospital a buck if he happens to fall tonight and really get hurt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is part of the problem. It's a huge part of the problem, I think, in medicine today, is that doctors are not the ones making the ultimate decision sometimes. Mm-hmm. Doctors are being told how much they can. You know, they're given limits. They're given 12 minutes per patient or 15 minutes per patient or 8 minutes per patient. And that's all not their own decision. That's the decision of whoever their employer is, whoever the hospital is, you know, hospital administrators, insurance administrators. Ultimately, they hold the power, but they're not, you know, their motive is profit, okay, for the hospital, for the institution, but not really. I'm sorry to say this, but they're not there in the trenches taking care of the patients every day. And I really, I think there is a move by physicians in America in some places to get out from situations like that and form their own sort of practices. But unfortunately, these practices, I mean, for one, well, we're not supposed to be talking about this. But anyway, I need to get off my soapbox. But I think bureaucrats are a huge part of the problem in medicine. And, you know,
yeah.
Doctors making too much money. Look at hospital administrators, how much they make.
Yes.
And insurance company people, how much they make. And, okay. So anyway, we were going to talk about attention, and I was just going to address one thing you talked about, Kim. When you are overwhelmed, okay, it is impossible to pay attention to anything, okay? So your number one goal, okay, when you have everything flying at you, is to, I don't know, somehow remove yourself from the situation or mentally remove yourself from the situation and get in control of your, I guess, thoughts first, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes when I'm, you know, when I've got a lot of tasks getting thrown at me all at once, and I, you know, it causes a whole lot of static in my head if I try to hold everything that I need to do in my mind. So what really mm-hmm. helps me in moments like that is to start making a list. Just getting all those little pieces I need to keep track of, just putting them on paper, and you know I'm finding that just a regular steno book works best. You know, I've given up on elaborate organizational systems. I just put it on paper.
Me too.
And it just really helps to getting it on paper helps me to get to be able to see okay, what pieces of this do I need to take care of today. Okay.
Right.
What piece needs mm-hmm. first? What piece needs to come next? And I think just taking that time out to strategize or to take what's flying through your head and putting it on paper, and then taking the time out to strategize, and I think that really helps. But the number one thing is to if you try to plow on when all those thoughts are swirling around in your head, you're not going to be able to to get much done, probably.
Right.
So anyway, I have a PowerPoint, okay, and I'm going to try to work through it.
Okay.
And, we may not get all the way through it, but the PowerPoint is called Attention and Effort Management, okay? So
good.
We'll try to get through the attention.
Okay.
And then the effort management has to do with how we get control of our attention, okay? And unfortunately, both are affected by the brain injury, and we'll just start from the beginning. So my first slide, and I can send you this PowerPoint, is attention. Attention, what is it, okay? And attention is the mental control system for deciding how hard to think about something, and it is a key process for quality control. So so how many mistakes have been made, major mistakes have been made, just because people weren't paying enough attention? Like pilots, okay? Pilots, when you have a mishap on the plane and the plane crashes, often they will find, when they dig up that black box, they'll find that the pilots were talking casually just in the few moments before before everything started to go wrong. They were kind of maybe not paying enough attention to something that was developing, and they didn't see it. Okay, unfortunately for people who have brain injury, that happens all the time.
Yep.
Okay, I'll tell you, I mean, when I, like I said, when things are, getting thrown at me and I'm not being able to pay enough attention to any one thing, everything goes downhill. It just all swirls and everything crashes, okay? So, mm-hmm. like today, tonight, before I left work, I got more than 40 cases. I received the specimens today for more than 40 cases.
Wow.
And I will receive this tomorrow morning. And the end of the day was really crazy. A lot of different things were getting thrown at me. I needed to spend a lot of time with my resident, showing her and really kind of figuring out how we're going to, what we call gross in the specimens to get exactly the slides that, you know, the sections that we needed to make, you know, microscopic slides of. But it ended up that there were papers all over my desk, okay, and all by my microscope. And I was really tired. I was needing to come home because of this, okay? And I was like, you know, if I come in tomorrow morning, okay, knowing from the past, okay, having learned from the past, if I come in tomorrow morning and all these papers all over the place, I will not get anything done for quite a while because it's just going to be all overwhelming to me. So I did exactly what I told you. I mean, I basically took a moment. And okay, and said, okay, I dressed each paper. I put it in, you know, where it needed to go and kind of made, oh, this I need to show this one of my colleagues tomorrow. This one I need to take to the office for billing. This, you know, and it, basically I took all of that stuff and put it into two or three piles with an action step. I have like a little card or sticky note on each one saying exactly what I need to do with it first thing tomorrow morning. So when I come to my office, bang, 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 in 5-10 minutes, those things are done. But if I had come in tomorrow morning and looked at that stuff, you know, I would have been overwhelmed before I even started, okay? So I think, you know, basically, you know, recognizing the situation, for me, it's happened before in the past where, you know, if my work is too scattered, I end up not getting anything done. So, you know, just taking the time to kind of put it into categories or pieces and, you know, kind of putting some space between things really helps my mind to function better. And then another thing is, like I have my microscope, I could turn I have my chair turned to the microscope, my back is to the desk, so where my computer is. So if I have piles on by my microscope, when I actually sit down to look at my slides, I take those piles that are by the microscope, I put them, turn around and put them on the desk. That way, my area, what's in front of my eyes, is free of clutter. It really helps. Those are just some things that really help me is to make sure, I mean, what may be behind me is, it doesn't matter so much, okay? But at least what's in front of me, when I start, you know, working, that really does need to be sort of clutter-free. I don't know if that helps at all. So,
it does. Okay. That helps you focus on what's in front of you because you don't have all the minutia around you. So I would think that's really good. That's a manual way of adjusting your focus by just removing the stuff that you don't want to be focusing on out of your field of vision. I think that's excellent.
Yeah, because if I leave it like within my field of vision, somehow my mind is going to, my eye's going to, it's like, oh, what do I need to do about that?
Yeah.
But if it's not there, it's out of mind. Unfortunately for a person with brain injury, out of sight means out of mind sometimes. A lot of the time.
Or out of our mind, yeah.
Yeah, I got to be careful about stuff like that too. So anyway, like today I had a meeting at a certain time. And it was the sort of thing that if I got started in doing my job, I could easily just get so embedded in the job and not pay attention to going to the meeting when it was time. So I put a timer on so that, you know, when it rang, I would be, you know, prompted to get up and go to the meeting. Yeah, because otherwise I get so, you know, sometimes I have trouble focusing my attention at all, okay, and other times I get, like, hyper-focused, okay, so that I'm so focused on one thing that time passes by, you know, I forget to eat, you know,
yes,
and take care of myself. You know, it's sort of, yeah, I sort of forget, I just so focused on one thing that I forget to watch my own self, let's put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, anyway, going back to this, so attention is a key process for quality control. You know, basically, you know, little children, why do they make mistakes so often? They weren't paying enough attention. Isn't that something like when you're correcting children, you say, look at me, or you're talking to, look at me, you know. So paying attention to the right things at the right times is key to our recovery. Okay, so the impact of brain injury is that it weakens attention. And so you need to think harder about almost everything, especially hard tasks. Now, the good news about this is that making maximal effort at the right moment reduces or neutralizes this attention deficit. So, so like when you're driving, somehow people with brain injury often can drive quite well, Why? Because they know, that it is a it is a hard task, that they need to pay close attention, and they can pull that up within themselves to drive, The thing is, we need to pull up that effort within ourselves whenever we're encountering a hard task, So like tonight, before I left work, I really did not feel like going through those piles, But I was like, if I had, knowing if I come in tomorrow morning, it'll probably be, a good half hour before I start working, and maybe, an hour or two could piddle away before I get anything accomplished unless I do this 5 minutes of organization now, So I pulled that up within me, I asked that of myself. And that's hard. I mean, managing effort is also a very hard thing for people with brain injury, particularly when you are tired, And to ask yourself a little bit more. Now, I'm not saying, I there is a time to rest and there's a time, that you shouldn't push yourself any further. But at key moments, we need to start, we need to recognize, I've got to pay attention here, How many times have, like you almost, you drop something, And as you're going about doing something, you're like, this is about to fall. And then and then it actually falls.
Yeah.
Have you had, you know what I'm talking about, that sort of situation.
Yeah.
Well, whenever we have, a thought like that, we got to somehow pull it up within us to pay closer attention at that moment. Because it's a warning, It's like your brain is giving you a warning, but we're not paying enough attention to give it the we're not paying enough attention to give it the attention that it needs. I don't know how to explain it, but
Good. We've got to pay attention to the cues. You're saying that we're getting cues, and we're so hyper-focused or unfocused that we're totally missing the cues, but we are getting some clues ahead of time, and if we pay attention to those, it might not have to go quite as far down the road as or as far off the track as we can tend to get sometimes. So that's good. That's, to me, that's mindfulness, getting into mindfulness and paying attention if something's a cue, kind of being aware of our surrounding, and what you did. And I understand what you mean about what you did tonight with the papers, but, the incentive there to push that little extra is, like you said, anywhere from 30 minutes to 3 hours of easier tomorrow, and being able to see the cue ahead of time of what tomorrow's going to look like if you don't take that extra few minutes today.
Yeah. Kathy Moeller, you know who she is.
Oh, yeah, sure. Brain Bucks.
She talks about, before you leave work for the day, making mental notes about where you need to start tomorrow, So it's the sort of the same idea. By paying a little bit more attention now, putting forth the effort to pay a little bit more attention now, tomorrow morning you're going to be able to start, right off, So that's kind of, I'm kind of done with that little track. Another little pun, the other thing that I kind of wanted to address is, how did I learn to pay attention to my work at the end of the day? I learned it by writing down brain-injured moments. And every time I get on this show, I'm always going to be talking about the importance of writing down brain-injured moments. So it has happened before that I've come into work with papers scattered all over and let hours pass. Without really getting anything done or flitting from one thing to the other, and not getting, you know, any one solid piece of work done, because I wrote it down at the brain injured moment and studied it, you know, I kind of came up with a plan back then about what I was going to do to avoid this situation again. So,
right.
I mean, maybe, you know, our listeners can kind of start thinking about, okay, when something happens, I don't pay enough attention to something or any sort of mistake happens, that something doesn't go as well as it should have, you know, write it down and then kind of study it, take it apart and say, okay, why did this happen? You know, what can I learn about my brain about, you know, from what happened? And then what plan can I make so this doesn't happen again? So tonight's organization was a result of my having written down a brain injured moment in the past and studying it, okay? So
excellent.
The thing about making maximal effort is you can't make maximal effort all the time, okay? And for people who have brain injury, particularly, putting our attention on something is very draining, okay? It would be nice if we could pay maximal attention all the time, okay? But it simply is not possible, okay? Particularly for someone with brain injury. So what studying your brain injured moment does, it helps you to recognize those situations where you do need to put out the effort to give something maximal attention. Because the things that you make mistakes on, those are hard tasks. Maybe they would not have been hard before we had an injury, okay? But now they are, and that's why you made a mistake. Do you see?
I do.
So, you know, mindfulness is a good way to explain it, but it's hard to be mindful all the time, okay?
Oh, I know.
Brain.
Yeah.
So let's go on to the next one. So attention is a key. I may be repeating myself, but I'm kind of talking off my PowerPoints easier, okay? So attention is key to recovery, okay? It's not all that's needed for recovery, but you need, I mean, it's sort of like a first step, okay? Learning to pay attention to the right things at the right time. And so the top recoveries are based on controlling attention like a star athlete or musician controls their attention. So, I mean, I remember during the Olympics with the pole vaulters, the female gymnasts that were not pole vaulting, they were doing the flips off that beam. What do they call that? You know, you would see them stand there and just really, really, really focus, okay? Before they would even start, okay?
Right.
And then finally, when they thought they were ready, then they would move, and they would move with precision and speed and, you know. So that's the sort of attention that's the sort of kind of thing we need to learn to do before any hard task that we encounter, is to learn to draw that attention and before you start any task, okay? One of the things to do is, you know, whenever you're starting a new task, is this easy or hard? And if it's easy, you can pretty much do it mindlessly, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Like maybe if you have your clothes already laid out, getting dressed is easy in the morning, okay? But let's say you don't have your clothes all laid out. Well, getting dressed can be a hard thing in the morning, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, some of it's situational, but recognizing when you're prone to making a mistake and learning to pay attention at that moment, okay, like a star athlete or musician controls it. So why is attention important? And think about this. The people we trust and society values are those who control their attention fully, okay? So if you were putting your, you know, if a surgeon was operating on you, would you not want to know that the surgeon knew how to control his attention, you know, fully, consistently? Okay? You know, another thing is, and that is one problem with people with brain injury. Often when they work, and it's true for me too, I'm including myself in this, is one of the reasons we have inconsistent performance at work is because we have inconsistent attention.
Absolutely.
Okay? And mm-hmm. that inconsistency causes people to lose trust in us. Okay? And so that is why learning to control our attention is very important for recovery, particularly if you're wanting to go back to work. Okay? Fluctuating attention messes up everything. Okay?
Yeah.
Okay, so what can I do about it? Okay? When I ask maximum performance out of myself, I use my ability to focus attention on demand. So basically, one of the reasons why we have inconsistent performance is that we're not taking the time to focus right prior to it. We're just kind of casually. I mean, and that's one of the things that Larry told me. He says you approach tasks too casually. A lot of things he said is like, how dare you?
Yeah, I was going to say, how'd you take that?
Well, there were a lot of things I was like saying, how dare you, okay? But, mm-hmm. you know, he says, you approach your work with too casual an attitude. And I was like, you know, again, how dare you? I mean, I'm making diagnosis of cancer. You know, how can I approach my work too casually? Well, maybe not that diagnosis, you know, but getting the report out on time. Making sure I've proofread the report before I submit it, for typing, okay, mm-hmm. you know, maybe all the steps around it I'm not paying enough attention to, okay? So yeah. And a report ends up going back and forth to the secretaries 2 or 3 times because I didn't pick up all the mistakes the first time. Do you get it? So,
mm-hmm.
The important piece is learning when we're starting a new task is to ask yourself to perform it well, okay? And just taking that little moment second or, you know, 3 seconds, whatever, to ask that of yourself, your body, or I don't know how to explain it, you actually start calling up that effort to be able to focus attention. One of the things we did during my rehab was play therapeutic croquet. Okay. And
really?
So this croquet game was just like standard croquet, but it had a few extra rules. Okay. And if you didn't pay enough attention, you would skip you would mess it up. And it would be like saying, I am going to hit this ball to that wicket before I actually did it. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it was just, and I would say, okay, that's easy to remember. But I would forget it over and over again. And it wasn't until I forgot it that I would get upset about it. Okay, a lot of the things he asked me to do were things that I had to follow a certain sequence of steps. But
right.
my mind was on the end product, and I wasn't thinking about the sequence, and then I would mess up the sequence because I wasn't paying enough attention, and I would only get it right when I got upset about it. And somehow,
mm-hmm.
over and over and over again, I started learning how to pull that energy up. That energy I got up by being upset about it, I was able to do the task properly, okay? But the important
right.
thing is learning to call up that energy without that angst, okay? Learning, he calls that powering up, okay? So, and that's something that was developed over time, okay, and a lot of practice. So
yeah.
It's not going to happen, you know, the first time. I would say, I am powering up. Okay.
Yeah.
And I would say, okay, I am powering up. But yet it wasn't happening. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't happening again. So I made a mistake and I got upset. So I'm learning to do that. It's coming more naturally for me now. And the idea is to, and the idea was learning to activate without all the negative arousal kind of stuff, okay? So,
yeah.
Like before, sometimes I would put off a difficult case because it was hard, okay? And I would say, okay, tomorrow I'll have more energy. I'll be able to deal with it tomorrow. But then, you know, tomorrow comes, and if you don't deal with it, then the next day, and then things would get, you know, something would get to the point where I'm like, ooh, the doctor's going to call me. And so, and then it would become this angst thing, and finally I would pull up the energy to do it. But that was more of a negative, like adrenaline sort of energy. And that sort of energy got the task done, but it didn't feel good, okay?
Right.
When you're running always on adrenaline, it doesn't feel good. What does feel better now is I'm learning to, when I have that hard case, instead of saying, oh, I can't, sometimes I would resolve it, okay? So the dictation for the words, coming up with the words is harder sometimes than actually coming up with the diagnosis, okay? Coming, you know, right, you know, dictating that whole report is very, dictating is very difficult for me. And so, but now I say, okay, let me just go ahead and dictate it now, because I know it's a lot easier to do it now than to pick it up tomorrow, okay? And if I don't get it right now, I'll at least I'll have something to work off of. And so it's more like a curiosity. It's more like a dopamine. I don't know, okay, dopamine is sort of like the joy sort of neurotransmitter, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And it's sort of like I don't know how to explain it, more joy. More, it's like, let's see what I can do, okay? And that calling up that effort, that, I don't know how to say, joy, it's like, okay, let's see if I can do this and if I can, you know, and how, and often I get it right on the first time and I don't have to worry about it, you know, correcting it again, just because I took that little effort to do it right then, okay? I called that, I powered up, I pulled that up from within me by asking myself, to be able to do it, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So now, okay, so what can I do? So basically, when you ask maximum performance out of, when I ask maximum performance out of myself, I use my ability to focus attention on demand, okay? So I need to approach tasks like a competitor, focused, controlled, motivated, and ready to perform at my best. And you know what? It's really working for me. attention lace. I'm sort of going off of this PowerPoint, so if it sounds a little bit disjointed, it is okay. Attention lays the foundation for every task. Okay, so it's like building on rock rather than building on sand. Okay.
Right.
Okay, so if you don't take the time to kind of put your focus and attention on a task before you build, like if you try to build the house without putting the foundation there, the house isn't going to last very long, right?
Right.
So learning to pay attention right before you start a task, okay, kind of taking that little moment or whatever it takes to pay enough attention to something, that will help you to get through the whole, to do the task so much better, okay? And
right.
So for every brain-injured moment, you know, one of the things you can ask is, did I power up enough to give this task the attention it needed? Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So what does the deficit look like? Okay, this kind of talks about it. The survivors will approach a task too casually, and they'll look like they're doing okay until the information starts coming in too quickly or the task gets too complicated. And then they're kind of lost in the, they get confused and they're kind of lost in the fog, okay?
Yeah.
So because they didn't pay enough attention to begin with, okay? If they took the time to before the task starts, to put the attention and kind of call up that effort within them, then the task gets done without making mistakes, without getting overwhelmed when things start coming, okay? Another thing about information is we need to learn to regulate the flow of information that comes to us, okay? So, like, if you're talking to a friend and your friend's telling you story after story after story, you know, and the whole bunch of stuff is coming to you, you may not be able to follow anyone. You know, learn to kind of traffic cop. One of the things that Larry taught me to do was to kind of put my hand up when there was too much information coming, okay, and say, okay, let's pause for a second and kind of, so I can kind of control, I mean, let me repeat
back
to what I thought you said. So, you know, learning to control that rate of information. Another thing is like when you're, you know, going to a lecture or a seminar or something that you think is important, you can't stop the information coming, right? But you can tape record. And then you can, you know, And then you can, if it's something is important, you can go back and listen to it again. So that's a little sidebar, okay?
Good one.
The problem with powering up is that attention almost always impairs your, like your energy system, okay, and your motivation, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
So a lot of problems, you know, I remember, especially when I first had the injury, I would just sit and veg. I would just sit there and really not think about something for mm-hmm. quite a long time, okay? And even now, if I'm tired or if I'm overwhelmed or whatever, I can still do that. It's called adynamia. You don't, or dysdynamia. You don't have the ability to motivate yourself or to motivate yourself enough, okay? So that's mm-hmm. one of the problems with powering up. But it is something we can learn to do, okay? Some survivors often wait to get focused until after close attention is required. And also, we've already kind of addressed that. But also another thing that happens with us is that we are easily distracted, okay?
yes.
So I have a survivor at one of my meetings who was, I think I might have used this example before, forgive me if I did, but it's such a great example. She has wooden floors, okay, and she's walking from one end of the house to the other with these big shears, you know, for cutting the hedges, okay? And the thought crosses her mind, oh, I've got to be, you know, not drop these, okay? And then as she's walking through the house, something catches her attention. Maybe she heard a bird outside. And the moment her attention goes to listening to the bird, her hands open and the shears drop on the floor. Okay?
Yeah.
It can happen that quickly. Okay?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That's called situational capture, where the situation occurs around, you know, captures your attention and takes your attention away from the task at hand. So she says, what do I do? And I said, basically, if you got the shears, basically put the blinders on until you get to where you're going. You know,
mm-hmm.
kind of learn to plow through, okay? Another
yeah.
thing is a lot of we with brain injury often talk about good days and good and bad brain days, right?
Right.
Okay. And part of that is caused by fluctuations in attention. On a good brain day, we're able to get things done properly, right? And things
mm-hmm.
are going well. But on a bad brain day, okay, it's like once something bad happens, once something goes wrong, it's like you can't get anything to go right, okay? And part
yep.
of it is because for whatever reason that day, you're having more problem with attention, okay? And actually, one of my first discussions that I actually started on LinkedIn was about how do you turn a bad brain day into a good brain day? Because
mm-hmm.
I would have days at work where, you know, where I basically almost give up on the day, okay, almost give up on getting anything productive done that day because, you know, I either didn't sleep well or whatever, and I was like, okay, you know, the thing, and say, okay, tonight I'll make sure I get the rest I need, and tomorrow I'll do better. But the thing is, then the work builds up, okay?
Right.
So what I needed to learn to do with this, what this rehab really helped me to do was to have bad moments, but not
yes.
bad days, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not saying I don't make mistakes ever. I'm not saying I'm controlling my attention, you know, perfectly. But I'm learning, like, when one bad thing happens or, you know, not to give up on the whole day. Just kind of say, okay, why did this happen? Okay, what do I need to do to make this better? Do I need to stop? Do I need to take a rest, you know, a break, 5-minute break? Do I need to eat? Am I hungry? Okay.
Right.
Do I need to go to the break room for 5 or 10 minutes? Okay. Do I, you know, kind of assess the situation and, you know, make a course correction and then go on? And so
right.
it's really almost baffling to me how I don't have whole days that are going badly anymore. And so maybe that gives somebody some hope, okay?
Absolutely. Well, When you said earlier about, you know, you were thinking about a task and you're thinking of the end game and you'd screw up the prior steps, I was thinking about kind of what you're talking about now. You know, people are saying, I'm having a bad day, that you do have the ability to change your day at any point during the day you decide to change it. Just because one bad thing happened doesn't mean you've got to write off the whole day. But I was also thinking on your example of thinking of the end game, that being very deliberate, a step at a time in the sequence they go in without looking ahead would really help me, I think, you know, to not be thinking too far out ahead, but putting more deliberate focused intent on each step in sequence, because I too would do that. Look at the end game.
Yeah, so that's one of the things that he also taught. He said, you know, you got to think about the result, okay, but kind of shift your attention from the result to the process.
Right.
You know, to the, result, the process, and start pay attention to both to make sure that you're producing a quality result, you know, all along the way.
Right.
Some other reasons that we have fluctuating attention are strong emotions, either positive or negative, okay? So my first 3 years at the VA actually went relatively well, okay? But I ran into a period where I started having more trouble with my work. And what was happening is there was a lot of turmoil with I had three teenage boys at the same time. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. And some of the turmoil and the relational struggle that we were having was I wasn't able, you know, because of sort of like the brain injury fixation on stuff, okay, I would still be feeling those strong emotions and trying to figure things out, you know, even subconsciously while I was at work, okay. Maybe I was trying to focus on the work, but still there was that static, that emotional, you know, kind of negative energy static in the background, and it kept me from being able to, you know, to work most effectively. Okay, so another thing is like when you're pretty excited about something. When I get excited about something, is also a time that I can make mistakes. Okay, so that's something that can affect our emotions our attention to strong emotions. Sleep deprivation, okay? Illness, especially when you have a fever. Fever is really hard for a person who has brain injury. It really messes with your head. Okay, yes. Fever, not enough food or water, okay, can cause us to fluctuate attention. And also chronic pain. Chronic pain can be overwhelming to anybody, but particularly for a person with brain injury, it's like, you know, their mind is focused on the pain and there's really no mind left to focus on anything else. So, so having bad brain days or moments is a natural part of living with brain injury. They do not have to be disabling. So bad brain days, and today was actually a bad brain day for me. Actually, you know, now that I think about it, I went to bed. There's a decision on my mind, actually a huge decision, and I may share it with you at some point, but it's a huge decision. I am considering kind of changing the course of my career.
Mm-hmm.
And opportunity has come up, but there is some risk involved. And so it's, you know, I think it's kind of, you know, kind of weighing heavy on me these days. So not only have I had a record number of cases this month, I've also had this thing that I'm thinking about, okay? So last night when I went to bed, I didn't, even though I took some, you know, some sleeping medication because I knew I was going to have some trouble, even though I took it, I didn't sleep for probably till almost 3 in the morning. I was laying in bed, okay?
Yeah, right.
I did sleep, okay, and so, but I didn't get up, I didn't move around, because I've learned that, you know, just laying there and resting, you know, and not getting upset about it is still restful, okay? So this morning I went to work really without the optimal rest that I needed. But I was like, okay, today I'm going to have to be extra careful not to waste my time to get, you know, to get going. And actually, once I got going, I forgot about the fact that I hadn't had enough sleep, okay? So
sure.
It took that special mental effort, okay? Because that's what Larry said. One of the things he taught me, one of the compensation strategies, is not to give up on a bad brain day, but to put forth the effort to boost my attention high enough to stay consistent, okay? I don't have to throw in the towel, okay? That was one thing he would say, that you give up too easily. I was like, how dare you? How dare you say I give up too easily? But he was right. He was right.
Just change your focus.
Okay, so I'm going to go through some, I'm going to kind of speed through the rest because we're coming, you know, it is 10 o'clock, and I do want to leave some time for questions. I'm okay till 10:30.
Okay.
So I'm going to run through some compensation strategies. One thing to help with your attention and energy and effort is to do physical activity, particularly early in the day, okay? So by staying active and fit, you have more energy, and because you have more energy, you have more energy to focus your attention, okay? Remind yourself that, okay, I remind myself that my damaged brain no longer tries hard enough unless my conscious mind makes it try harder, okay? So, you know, instead of approaching tasks, diving into something, my brain doesn't automatically pay enough attention or try hard enough. I've got to think consciously about making it do that. I challenge myself by setting goals. To challenge yourself by setting goals, pumping up motivation before the task starts. What will happen if I don't get this task done or if I don't do it well, okay? To kind of visualize the success or the failure, how you will feel if you don't do this task well, okay? Or you don't
right.
get it done. Oh, this doctor's going to call me. If I don't get this report done today, he's sure going to call me tomorrow morning, okay?
Right.
It's not just the doctor. It's the patient. The patient care is waiting to get the report out, okay? So, you know, kind of visualizing. There's actually a study that was done with radiologists, okay? And they actually tested the study was having radiologists look at the patient picture right before they looked at the X-ray or whatever, okay? And you know what? They didn't spend that much more time, okay, but they found more, okay? They found more of what those incidental findings. You know how you have an X-ray for one thing and you pick up another thing, okay?
Yes.
Radiologists, just by looking at the patient before they started the task of reading the X-ray film, okay, were able to do a better job just because they looked at the patient's picture. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes now, at the VA, we do have many of the patient pictures in the record. If I'm having trouble starting on a case, I was like, let me see what this person looks like. And you know what? It really does help to kind of put that, you know, this is a patient, you know, whose slides I'm looking at right now. And I need to I need to get this done. I need to put myself up to get this done because this patient's waiting for an answer. Okay? So I'm being, you know, a little bit, maybe too personal here, but maybe it helped, you know, people to kind of see it in their situation.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're concentrating, try to minimize anxiety, distractions, and emotions, okay? Schedule and do the most demanding, like for me at work, right outside of my door is where the histology lab is. So we have 4 or 5 histologists within feet of my door, okay? And they're listening to music, they're talking, they're while they're cutting and labeling things, whatever.
Oh,
God. And so if I leave my door open, I start listening to those conversations, okay?
Right.
So what I do is I have a little eraser stuck in my door so that I can just have my door just propped open, okay? so that people can feel free to come in, okay? But yet it cuts down on the noise, so that distraction is, you know, goes away, okay?
Yes.
So that's one thing. You know, think about how you can minimize distractions and anxiety and emotions when you're trying to concentrate. Like, for example, like when you're trying to sleep, you know, how these thoughts go through your head, what do people say to do? They say to have a pad of paper by your bed and write the things down and decide to worry later, okay? So another thing you can do is schedule and do the most demanding work early in the day, okay? And then another compensation strategy is don't just demand of yourself, reward yourself for success, okay? So don't ask yourself always to be getting something done, okay? Don't try to make your whole day a parade of productivity, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Have some time to have a cup of coffee or to call a friend or to give yourself a manicure, a pedicure, whatever, okay? Make, you know, plan also to reward yourself, to do the things that you're, that make you feel satisfied and happy, okay?
Yes.
Because if you don't do that, your attention, you're going to start resenting. And then when you start resenting, those strong emotions keep you from concentrating, and the whole thing just goes downhill, okay?
Well, it's important to keep the balance, too, because when we're having those bad brain days, we can be so self-depreciating and self-damning and have that negative self-talk that I think it's really important just to keep the balance, you know, a healthy balance going, to stop and reward yourself and recognize your successes and your progress, you know, too.
Yeah.
Good point.
So I'm kind of working through these compensation strategies. Another thing is effort improves accuracy and speed, okay? So so work on accuracy first and then focus on speed, okay? So whenever you're learning to do something, the effort needs to be focused on accuracy and then speed, okay? That's where your attention is. So tasks requiring a major effort boost, okay, so hard tasks, okay? Hard tasks would be things that you need to use a compensation strategy for, or a task that's unfamiliar, or something that has high or absolute standards, like for me, making a diagnosis of cancer or not, okay, I've got to get it right.
Yes.
There's no understanding by other physicians if you make the mistake wrong. I mean, if you make the wrong diagnosis. It's not like, you know, you can have a little lymph node that comes up and you go to your primary care doctor and they say, you might need some antibiotic. And then if it doesn't go away, come back. No, it's not like that in pathology. It's absolutely
right.
But it has to be right, okay? Another thing that you need to focus a little bit more energy to pay attention is if you have a challenging competition, or where there's significant risk of harm or injury, or a task that requires suppression of strong temptation. So like if you're going to a party, okay, for me, going to a party and having all sorts of stuff around there that I don't, should not have because it's not good for me, you know, you need to call that effort up, because if you go in there mindlessly, what are you going to do? You're going to mindlessly snack, right? And the next day, you know, or you'll come to the end of the party like, what did I do? You know, basically without, you know, because you didn't put the effort into paying enough attention to what you were doing. Sometimes for me, when I'm not sure how to do something, that creates a great deal of inertia, okay? Let's say I don't know how to approach a case, okay? And I'm a little bit proud. You know, I want to figure things out by myself, okay, like a, you know. I've been doing this for 13 years altogether, and, you know, and I trained, all of my colleagues are people with whom I trained when I was a resident, and I want to figure out by myself. But, you know, I need to recognize when I'm getting stuck and learn to ask for help, you know, so I can get the ball rolling, okay? So for me, you know, when I'm unsure of the next step, that creates a great deal of inertia, and I've got to put forth the effort to get the help that I need when I need it, okay? Anytime I doubt my ability to succeed is another time that I need to put forth some effort or any difficult task. But all of this requires discipline, okay? And basically, I mean, basically, the discipline is this, and I actually have this on my, I have a clipboard. She's kind of like on a stand at my work, and one of the, I kind of have what I call a task sequence on it, and I came, I mean, it applied the principles I learned with Larry, but the first thing it says, warning, new task, okay? The next line says, stop and think, okay? The next line says, easy or hard, okay? And then say, if hard, visualize failure. What's going to happen if I don't get this stuff right, okay? And power up, okay? And then proceed, you know, make a plan. The next one, it says, make a plan. Proceed slowly and carefully, focusing on one step at a time, but also keeping the end goal in mind to make sure you're coming with a quality result, okay? So when do we need to pay enough attention? It's not a matter of if I need to pay attention, but when and for how long. Because like I said, it's very, very energy draining to be paying maximal attention at all times to all things, okay? So we need to learn, you know, by studying our brain engine moments, by thinking about these, you know, some of these things I just talked about, to need to pay attention and rally effort at key moments during the day. This is my next slide, my next to last slide. I say my problems, and I kind of addressed some of these. But I can usually call up my attention and my effort for hard tasks that I consider critical or important, particularly if under time pressure, okay? What I have trouble
yes.
with is calling attention effort up when the situations seem easy or not as critical, okay? So let's say, like tomorrow, I have more than 40 slides coming for my cases. I mean, sorry, slides coming for more than 40 cases, okay? But next week, I don't have any slides coming to me. I'm on another duty next week, okay? And this other duty doesn't typically take all day. It's something that's on call for, okay? So I will reasonably have some cleanup time next week. I could work on the cases tomorrow. But what I need to be aware of is to put out my maximum effort tomorrow, because tomorrow I'm working with my resident. And when I'm working with my resident, because we're talking through the case, so much easier for me to pay attention and get my work done. So I need to treat, you know, I need not to think about, oh, I don't have to get it done because I have some time next week, okay?
Right.
I need, today is my golden opportunity to work with my resident, okay? And we need to get as many cases completed as we possibly can, because I know any case that I work on completely by myself probably takes me 2 to 3 times as long, because it's harder for me to focus attention. Because I'm sitting there with a resident, you know, you're talking the case through, okay?
Right.
And you don't want to waste time. You don't want to waste their time. And so it really helps me to, you know, like I said, tomorrow, not to think that I have this time next week, but to say, okay, today's the golden opportunity, okay?
Yeah.
Sometimes I have to fail before I take a task seriously enough, and I just kind of gave you an example of that. I need to learn to power up before tasks start in order to be consistent, accurate, and timely. And then self-monitoring. Another thing we need to learn to do is to pay attention to our paying attention, okay? So, because that's one thing that tends to happen. Remember I told you when you focus, sometimes you get hyper-focused and you forget to watch yourself,
yes.
kind of
yes.
get lost. So that's, you know, I use timers, and timers really help me. You know, even just putting on a timer before I start a task and say, okay, this thing probably should take me 10 minutes, okay? And then, you know, getting started on it, and then when the 10-minute timer goes, okay, did I actually, you know, did I get this done? Was my attention focused on this task? Okay, that sort of thing. So the timers really helped me do that. I have actually, I have 2 timers at work, but there have been times I've had 3 timers at work. So someone, one of them came home and never made it back. Okay. I don't know where it went, frankly. Okay. So I just talked about that. I get lost in doing a task and lose track of time, sense of self, and what is important to me. So I think that's about it. I think I'm done. So I don't know if this was helpful, but I, you know,
yes.
I can take some time to answer questions if anybody has any.
Okay, we do have somebody who's been holding quite a while here. Area code 206, you're on the line with us. Who do we have?
Hello, this is Javier Figueroa.
Oh, Javier!
Hey, hello, guys.
How are you?
I'm doing just fine. I was glad to hear that my colleague, Dr. Romanus, has such a well-developed strategy, and it sounds like, you know, you don't need to be brain injured to use it. That actually sounds like it would improve my work performance quite a bit as well.
Yeah.
Very much.
It's wonderful.
Good brain strategies all brains. Thank you for listening in, Javier. I feel quite flattered that you listened in.
Oh, of course.
He wrote to me about it today, Maria. He wrote, well, it might have been last night, but I got the message today. Anyway, he wrote to me about wanting to hear you tonight and being excited that you were on with this topic.
Oh, now I feel a little bit, I hope I did all right. Okay. I was a little bit all over the place, but it's okay. I think we finally got the points across. Okay.
Exactly. So. And, you know, it's the important points of having a game plan. I mean, especially with a brain injury and you know, when you're actually in the workforce and still trudging through it, you know, those are key points to remember, that you have to give yourself, you have to forgive yourself, because the hardest person, the person that's going to be the hardest on you is going to be you. And you're always remembering the fact that, oh, well, before my brain injury, I could do this. And that is the biggest hurdle to get over. I've heard it repeatedly from a lot of folks that have suffered a traumatic brain injury and are living with the consequences. That is the hardest thing to get over. And these strategies, the ones that Maria was talking about, you know, one is to allow yourself to feel the loss and to have a strategy to overcome that loss. And these are wonderful techniques that allow you to compensate and power through and, you know, let go of a lot of the anger and resentment associated with a traumatic brain injury. And that is probably the most important tool to develop. And I don't know if that's been your experience, Maria.
Yeah. I think that for me to be consistent at work, I'd say, you know, what I talked about tonight has been, you know, actually my boss just told me last week, you are a poster child for this, okay? And that felt really, really good, because I don't always do perfectly. You know, there's still, you know, but it's not, but he sees such a huge improvement, okay? And, you know, yeah, but I'd say, yeah, learning to control my attention has really improved my consistency at work. So thank you.
That's wonderful. And thank you, guys. I love the show, and I'll get off the line to let someone else call in and ask questions.
Okay.
Thanks so much for calling in tonight. Nice to hear from you. You'll have to come back on, too, so be stirring the pot and make a date with me.
You got it.
All right. Thanks for calling in.
Now.
Okay.
Bye-bye. I so enjoy that you introduced me to him. He's just wonderful, too.
Yes.
You know some swell people.
I've gotten to know a lot of special people through this. Yes.
Yes.
So, okay. But like you said, like you, I was very alone in this for a very, very long time. So.
Yep. Yeah, this is a great reward. Okay, area code 202, you're on the line with Maria.
Thank you very much. Is my mic open?
Yes, Allie.
Okay, I didn't hear unmuted. Hi, Dr. Maria. Hi, Kim, and all the listeners out there in the listening audience. My name is Allie, and I am a six-time brain injury survivor, traumatic brain injury survivor, all frontal lobe. And I really appreciate you sharing your wonderful compensatory strategies and all of the information that you've shared to allow us to have a better edge and handle on managing our day-to-day lives. And my question to you, and I'm going to try to keep it brief, has everything to do with my attempt to seek proper perspective around something that's happened recently in my life. I had a trip that actually was scheduled to take place last week. One of my first cousins was getting married, and I was taking a family trip about almost 1,000 miles away from my home, and we were going to be riding in the car. And because it was a social situation where I was going to be around a lot of family, and I have a large family, I was going to be seeing people on both sides. And I have to do a significant amount of preparing mentally, physically, cognitively, just across the board in anticipation for an event that's going to require a significant load, like cognitive load, or do you understand what I'm saying? It would be
absolutely
more demanding than my normal day-to-day affairs and my own little cloistered oasis, so to speak. And so my sister and I, for the very first time in my life, got into this horrendous argument stemming around she didn't know my dog was coming in the car with us. And her husband isn't a dog person, which is an issue for me, but that's her husband, and they have a wonderful relationship and a great family, wonderful life. But the point of the matter is what had initially been, I was on board looking forward to the trip. I was preparing for the trip, and just hours before we were slated to leave, I get slammed with this emotional eclipsing of kickback because of, I don't know, a perspective differential. And so we went back and forth. She's now changing her story, saying she said from the very beginning, of course so-and-so can come. I didn't know she was coming. It's not a big deal. I would have preferred knowing ahead of time. That's not what happened. And so much energy and so much frustration, and I felt broadsided because for many of us who live with brain injury, I dare say that our worlds are significantly smaller than they would be if, you know, we didn't have these challenges on our plates in our lives to deal with. And so we tend to assign maybe even more emotional significance to those fixtures in our lives that provide emotional support and stability. It could be friends, family, pets, or whatever the case may be. And my dog is like my child. And so I kind of took that as, how dare you deny my family when I've asked very little of you. I don't want to make this into a therapy session. The point that I'm making and the question I'm asking is, I am now dealing with the aftermath of such a pervasive, multi-layered issue that started out as, I didn't know your dog was coming, and I would have rented a car had I known she was coming because my husband doesn't like animals and I don't want her messing up the car. It was just a bit much. And that triggered all these other issues around feeling unsupported and so forth and so on. And I'm finding it very difficult to get back on the wagon, so to speak. And I'm feeling rather despondent because I feel emotionally and cognitively and spiritually and psychically bankrupt at this point. I already felt like it was all that I could do to get myself up to speed to go. And with such a huge, what in my opinion was an egregious act of disloyalty or just lack of understanding, I feel like it's very difficult for me to kind of get my legs back up under me. I was completely knocked off my square, and I'm having a difficult time ascertaining proper perspective. And I don't know if there's a strategy that can address this, and as a result, I've suggested that we maybe get some support from a neutral third party, but I'd be interested to hear your input on this because I'm really free-falling here. I'm trying to prevent myself from continual free-falling, but I just feel really depressed, and it's been I went out the house for the first time on yesterday in a week, and that's unlike me. You know, got dressed for the first time in a week. That's completely unlike me. And it's really, it feels like it's even taking chunks out of my tomorrow before it even has gotten here, because I just don't have anything in me to even muster up, to even attempt to draw from. Do you understand what I'm attempting to communicate?
I don't have a whole lot of time, and again, I'm not a therapist, but I'm just going to speak from personal experience, okay? There have been times in my life where something unexpected happened, and I was completely, like, it was betrayal. It was something that slammed, you know, they say comes out of nowhere and slams into you, and or something, you know, and the thing is the unfairness of it, the injustice of it, you know, the fact that you have a brain injury and can't deal with it properly, or it happened because you had a brain injury. I mean, all these things seem so unfair. And then it's so easy to maul, okay? Like, well, I talked about this hyperfixation, okay?
Yeah.
Sometimes we hyperfixate on emotions, okay, and thoughts, and just kind of obsess. And it's called also perseveration, where you kind of, you know, focusing on one thing, one negative thing, you know, and there were times, there were months, you know, and this is, I don't know, now 15 years ago, where, you don't need to know the whole story, but basically I would, it was a litany. It was a litany. Why did this happen? Why did God allow me to have children if I could not, you know, care for them properly? Why did, you know, why this, why that, why this, why that, why this, why that? Okay, and all it did was keep me under, okay? And for me, what got me out was, you know, basically saying, I'm a Christian, okay? And I even got to the point where it's like, you know, God, I didn't feel like God even existed, because if he did, this would not have happened, okay? or I don't know if he, maybe not that he didn't exist, but that he didn't care. Okay, he may care about everybody else in the world, but not me, okay?
Yes.
And so I finally came to the point myself where I had to say, I don't care if it doesn't make, you know, even if it's not true, it was a lot better believing in God, okay, and having hope for the future than questioning and being angry and asking all these questions, okay? And it was almost like when I made that decision that I am going to, you know, not focus on these thoughts anymore, okay, you know, take a next step, even though, you know, and kind of trust that things are going to work out, even though I couldn't see past the nose on my face, because everything in the future seemed dark. I was in a deep depression, okay, and I couldn't see how this could work out, okay, And yet, I would just take one step as it was shown to me, you know, and then the next step, okay? And basically also refuse the litany, okay? Think about something else, okay? Watch a movie over and over and over again. You know, one of the things I did, there was a movie that While You Were Sleeping with Sandra Bullock, okay? I watched that movie, and I, like, would play, you know, instead of thinking about these negative thoughts and why this and why that, I would actually play the movie scene by scene in my head, okay, just so that I was thinking about something else, okay? And so what I'm thinking, Allie, maybe what I'm applying this to your situation is, you know, the unfairness of it, not support, all of that stuff is yucky, okay? You know, you need to somehow let go of it and, you know, read a book, watch a movie, you know, watch some, you know, comedy stuff on Netflix or YouTube or whatever. Distract yourself. When those thoughts, when those emotions, when those things, you know, the thought you know, it's only going to pull you down. Okay.
Yeah.
I wish this thing never happened. I wish that your sister, you know, I mean, but you can't go back and change the past. Okay, what you can do is, you know, free up your mind and focus on the future. Okay,
exactly.
One of the ladies in my give back group, like when she she has a problem with, because of her brain injury, saying inappropriate things like, you know, when she gets upset, okay? Like very upset, okay? And she can go from 0 to 100 very, very quickly, okay? And she can say, you know, drop F-bombs right and left, okay? But what she says she learns to do is when she feels that feeling coming up, she tells herself, dog, 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 dog. She just says something else in her head, okay, just to distract herself from that negative emotion, to keep it from building up steam and overcoming her. I mean, dog, yeah. I mean, dog or something, some stupid word, just, I really think part of the problem is fixation here and then and learning to put your focus on something more positive. So
yeah.
I don't know if that helps.
Yep. I know that you're on your 10:30. I know this will be quick. I promise you I'll let you go. You said you had till 10:30. Let's make it quick. This is Maria.
Okay.
Well, Maria, thank you so much for everything. I've been listening from my car. I thought it was so important. I've got a little plug where I can plug my cell phone into the car that I bought at Radio Shack, and I had the windows down as I would stop at places on my way home and let people hear it. People were asking, what is this? What are you playing? I had it playing loud. And the reason is I thought this show was that important because a lot of people get stuck in themselves. I used to be that, and I appreciate how you've gone in depth about it so much tonight. I've been listening the whole time. I was driving my car and had to not be able to call in or anything until I got home. And so I just want to thank you for coming and doing such a wonderful job again. It was a beautiful presentation tonight. Thank you.
Thank you, Les.
Thank you,
Les. You can always be counted on for some encouragement.
Absolutely. He's great for that. And,
okay.
Allie, we're going to come back after the break. I did promise Maria I'd let her go at 10:30, and I don't want to threaten this good thing we got going with her coming back about every 6-8 weeks or so. So this is Dr. Maria Romanis, and tonight we were talking about attention and focus. And thank you so much for being with us tonight, Maria. It's always a pleasure to have you.
Okay, thank you.
And I'm
you.
Glad
good
your
night,
desk
Kim.
Is clear tomorrow.
Yes. Thank you. Okay, good night.
All right. Good night.
Good night.
Okay. Good for my promise that time. And Allie, I do want to come back and talk about what you were talking about after we just take a quick break, folks. And this is a little something we can probably all relate to about now. First of all, I'll thank our sponsor. I wanted to get right into Maria. I knew she had a limited amount of time tonight, so I skipped thanking our Brain Injury Radio sponsor, TBI Survivor Network, and my Recovery Now sponsor, Lash Publishing. I encourage you to check them out at lapublishing.com. Lash is the leading publisher on brain injury, blast injury, PTSD, and concussion. And so they have a wonderful magazine called Brain Injury Journey. And if you check out that website, and I'll put it in the chat room in a minute, lapublishing.com, look for Brain Injury Journey. It'll take you to their magazine page. You'll see that you can buy a subscription to have the hard copy of the magazine sent to you. But they also have a free, can't beat the price, online version. And I encourage you to sign up for that. They just have some wonderful pieces for survivors, caregivers, veterans, neuroprofessionals, and others. So be sure to check them out. We're going to come back for the second half of the show, which is open mic, and I have an idea of a couple things that we can talk about and listen to some great indie music too. So grab yourself a drink, kick off your shoes. We'll be back in 4 minutes again with something I think we can all relate to. And this is Leah West. You can see her at leahwest.com, or if you're on Facebook, facebook.com/LeahWest. This is called Not Invincible. Thank you.
needs a little help now and again.
That the truth. I'm Not Invincible by Leah West. I'm going to bring Allie and Les back up in a minute. If there's anyone who'd like to call in tonight and share what's on their mind, the number is 424-243-9540. Make sure to press 1 so I know that you do want to talk and that you're not just a listener. Anyway, 424-243-9540. And I was thinking about some things, and I'm going to bring Allie back up in a minute, that I learned going through a treatment plan, and it gave some compensatory strategies. And one of them was, well, what Dr. Maria was talking about, distract. And, you know, she mentioned some things like watching a comedy or repeating a mantra of some kind. For me, you know, sometimes it's listening to upbeat music, not crying your beer kind of music, but spiritual types of music sometimes, because they give messages of hope and uplifting. And another one of the strategies is action opposite emotion. My emotions might tell me that I want to stay in and not go out, pull the covers over my head, draw the blinds, and ruminate in the feeling that I'm going through, the negative thought process. But I know that I need to take an action opposite my emotion. So if my emotions are telling me to isolate, what my actions have to make me do is go out and help others or do something self-pampering for myself, like get that manicure or pedicure or shop for something I want, maybe something for the dog, a new diamond collar or something like that, something that makes me happy. So I have to do action opposite emotion. So action opposite emotion, distract, those are two tools that have helped me be able to turn something over. But with me, sometimes my obsessive thinking will make me turn it over and pull it back and turn it over and pull it back and keep going over it. And I've had one of those, and I'm not going to go into the details about it again, but a retaliatory feeling because somebody got one over on me, and I've been thinking too much about that. And the other thing I have to do, another tool I have to remember, is mindfulness. That person is sleeping just fine, and they're going about their life just fine. And it's like drinking poison and expecting someone else to die. You know, they're going about their life. That was just a thing for them, and they go on, and I give them more power than what was involved in the original infraction by letting it rent too much space in my head and not letting it go. So they're the ones who hurt me in the first place. I'm the one that continues to make the choice to hurt me by going over and over and over it again. So those are just a couple of the tools that I picked up, but I certainly am not proficient at doing that all the time. As I said a minute ago, I've been challenged myself in the last several days. And, you know, even taking a car trip, when you were talking about that, getting in a car with other people and going two blocks, let alone the amount of time that you are going to be spending in the car with other people, just gives me the willies to even think about it. So I would already be on three quarters of a tank of an emotional teeter before that circumstance even happened. So it would hit me harder, and I've got to look at that too, the circumstances surrounding why something is hitting me so hard. Am I hungry, angry, lonely, tired? That acronym HALT that I use. Am I in a situation like, good God, being in the car with a bunch of family members all the way across the country? You know, if they even said, you know, is that a new dress? I would find it offensive. Just that they opened their mouth while it was stressful enough to be doing a family event and driving in a car that far. So there might be something that was going on inside of me that made me react more strongly rather than respond and let it be their problem. I take it on as my own. And those are things, couple of tools that I've learned to use, and they help 80% of the time. And the end of that, and I'm then just going to unmute you two, is progress, not perfection, is what I was told. And so, you know, that I need to be happy when I make progress and I don't react the way that I used to all the time. And when I do react the way that I used to or have those negative feelings or that ruminating, stewing over something in my brain. I need to not be too hard on myself, but what Dr. Maria said about letting it go and at any cost letting it go, because the toxic thinking is so harmful to us and our psyche, which is already compromised, that you know, the other person isn't hurting, but we still are. And so, Allie, why don't you come back on the line? I've got you unmuted. And
Thank you so much, Kim.
I'm so sorry that that happened. That was a really uncomfortable situation.
I really appreciate your sage words of wisdom. And what makes it so challenging is my sister and I have a wonderful relationship, and she and I have never had this kind of fallout before. This is a first, and what bothers me, and I would suspect that because of your journey, these kinds of things are of supreme importance to you as well, things such as integrity, telling the truth, you know, living from a place in a space of truth, and exercising the golden rule, these types of higher consciousness type practices. And they're really, in my opinion, spiritual practices that shape and govern and call me to a higher state of beingness. And when other people don't seem to embrace it on the same level, especially when their actions create hurt, harm, or discomfort for me, it becomes particularly challenging. And in such an instance, when my, you know, beloved little sweetie pie, four-legged daughter was involved, I was just floored, because I don't really ask much of anything, if anything, of her and her husband and their family. And the one time that I need some support and understanding, and it wasn't even something that I even thought of on that level of, guys, can you all do this for me? We had already discussed it over a month and a half ago, and everyone back home knew about it, and they were all looking forward to me bringing my dog down, and she's only 20 pounds, so I'm thinking, what could be the frickin' problem? And I was looking forward to introducing her to her canine cousins and running on the land and that kind of thing. And it was just really, really unfortunate that it happened. And I was broadsided, because I think she was working an angle, which is another thing that I have an issue with, because, again, when one operates from just a more evolved state of being because of all of the training and the peeling back the layers of ourselves to really allow to be burned off, like the dross, you know, with just, I guess, the creation of steel type of a thing, burning off the impurities, you learn how to go through these, I don't want to say self-effacing in a negative way, but we learn how to, it really is about a practice, you know, and a lot of people who haven't had such challenging lives have not had the pleasure and the benefit of being challenged to even look at a lot of these things. So it's kind of life on life's terms for them from a different vantage point, though. Do you understand what I'm saying?
I do.
Yeah. And so a lot of times in a number of the circles that I know I travel in, and I would suspect that you travel in, especially in, you talk about recovery and things of that nature. I mean, when recovery is on the line, you know, it really calls us to be, you know, to call ourselves higher in order to stay in that space of consciousness and continually deciding to die unto our old selves, you know, to create the new and the better and the more, what's the word I'm looking for, sustainable, if you will.
Yeah.
It causes us to call ourselves higher.
Yes. No, I think that's a good word. I liked the, word. Good pick.
You like the what word now?
Sustainable. You were looking for the word, and I thought you found the perfect word.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I'm having some difficulty with my reception on my phone, but yeah, and so as a result, all of these things just kind of hit the fan, and she's not taking personal responsibility, which is another pet peeve of mine. And you know, personal responsibility is everything in certain communities. And so my thing is, without it, you have unworkability across the board. And so it's something that I'm finding myself confronted with when you have this juxtapositioning of lifestyles and consciousness, really, especially when it comes to creating workability. And so I'm very clear that there are certain things that tend to erode it, and I know and feel comfortable and relish in the fact that I did nothing wrong and I'm not wearing that. And then when I've been asked to lie, you know, to create a nice, sellable excuse as to why my mom and I didn't make it down, I'm thinking, and I even said as much, I'm not participating in that. You know, I wasn't responsible for tipping that first domino, and when it falls in a way that you don't like, you can't claim foul play and be pissed because it falls in a way other than the way you were expecting it to fall.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
A mess was made. And we have situations where a lot of these things are irreparable. I'm not saying that we won't ever have a good relationship because there's still a lot of love there. We've been in communication via text, but the bottom line is there's a lot of just revisionist historian type activity going on, and I don't appreciate it. And I'm thinking, oh, my God, that's not what happened. That's not how that happened. If that was the issue, it would have been a moot point. There'd be nothing for me to be upset about if you said from the very beginning, it's not a big deal. She can come. I just didn't know. I mean, there'd be no need for us to even venture down that road. And because
right.
It defies logic, it pisses me off because I'm like, what are you talking about? And it just unraveled, and a lot of things got triggered. Feeling abandoned and thrown under the bus and make the scapegoat yet again and just lie and make this nice little facade. No one has to know the real deal, and we'll just put it on you again. You weren't feeling good, and your doctor told you it's best to stay home. And now I keep hearing all this whispering, well, you know, she's got a brain injury. So, you know, and that has nothing to do with it. And it just seems like at every turn, I'm like, liars, you know, or, you know, untruth tellers or misrepresenters, or I don't know. It just feels like it's a sweater that continues to unravel, and it's threatening to destroy the whole structure, even though with that same yarn, you can knit something beautiful yet again. It doesn't have to be the same garment, but it can still be something of beautiful utility, you know.
Yeah, and the other thing to remember, too, and I always forget this because I take things personally. I figure if they say them to me, it's personal, you know. But the other side of that
mm-hmm.
coin is that a lot of times, you know, it's not even about us. It's
about
something
you.
Going
mm-hmm.
on with them, you know. Like maybe
right.
her and her husband had crosswords, or maybe she was feeling claustrophobic about, you know, the big family deal and the trip across the country, or, you know, who knows, maybe she had a fight with her best friend or woke up with PMS, you know, you don't know what factors were playing into her deal that made her react the
yeah.
way she did toward you. But I always think it's about me, because if it hurts me, it's personal. But, you know, somewhere in there
mm-hmm.
I had to learn to distinguish that sometimes it's not as much about me, is that I was the target in the way when that person was reacting poorly to something happening in their life.
That's awesome. That feels very resonant with me. I'm going to make a note of that. That could very well be the case. And as a matter of fact, that's part of the four agreements, you know, take nothing personally, you know. And it's important not to, because very rarely is it about us anyway. And when it comes to us being on our own spiritual journeys, yeah, it's always about us. But in terms of when persons show up in ways that we deem to be inappropriate or hurtful, especially if it's out of character for them, which it was, because my sister and I have a very loving, very supportive, very beautiful, very close and deeply connected relationship and friendship and always have, this was complete. I mean, I was broadsided and just thought, you got to, I mean, I really thought she was playing at first, because it was so strange for this to be her, you know, how she showed up. I've never seen this in her before. And her husband, when we talked on the phone, he said, I don't know what she's talking about. I don't have a problem with her coming. I mean, it's not a problem. And I'm like, well, if it's not a problem with you, why would she make it such a big daggone deal? I don't understand it. I really
don't. Well, see,
that
sounds like it's her. You know, that sounds like it's about, that sounds like it's more about her. You know, it doesn't hurt you any less, but that sounds like it's more about her, based on what you're saying. Her behavior was out of character. So there was something about that that had nothing to do with you and your dog.
Right, but then the net result is that my mom and I were now able to participate in such a you know, once-in-a-lifetime family event. You have people coming from all over the country for that, and all these people at the wedding, and my cousin lost both her parents, and my mom is like a surrogate mother to her and her sister, and, I mean, we were on program, and we weren't even there, and instead of the truth being told, they're being told, well, you know, Allie wasn't feeling good and her mom stayed with her. And I'm like, that's not the case. And so when I asked my mom, well, what are we going to say? Because I got to the point where I was hyperventilating even in talking with my sister, because I was so distraught and just couldn't believe it. And she refused to answer the question, well, who has a problem with her going? That's not the point. That's not the, my sister's a very smart, very sharp, very conscientious woman. Like I said, it's just bizarre. I'm like, what is going on with you? Are you kidding? What's the problem? Who has a problem with this? Do you have a problem? Well, I don't have a problem. Well, who has one? And I'm asking your husband, and she was like, not everyone's an animal person. Not everyone's an animal person, and you're trying to force people to be something they're not. He's not even going. What's the, I don't see the relevance. How's that so significant? And with all that I do for you and your family, and certainly my nieces, and you all do, like, almost nothing for me, it triggered a lot of things, because then the issue of a lack of reciprocity within the relationship came up. And it's really clarified my, you know, my insight and my decision to show up differently in my relationship with her and her family, not out of spite, but just because I've gotten sober to the fact that it is what it is, and it ain't what it ain't. You can't make people be something that they're not, and you can't make them do something that's not naturally in them to do. And if she truly feels this way, I need to make the adjustment. I'm not expecting her, you know, and other people to, but I need to adjust so that I can take better care of me, because for the longest time I've been giving to my own detriment, because I'm always giving, almost always, from a point of deficit. They're not doing it, and so I'm not going to continue to do it, because I've got a lot on my plate, and I've got a number of things that I need to do, and in the face of all that's been revealed, I'm not angry. I'm just disappointed. I'm not even hurt, you know. I'm not. But
now, maybe
I know
a
that
little.
No, I'm not hurt. I'm really not, because I don't really take it personal. Although I felt impacted, and I don't even have any resentment, but I take issue with the fact that it's still costing me daily, and the level of which the magnitude of the fallout has personally landed at my doorstep is still affecting me, and I'm pissed behind that. I always lose a lot of time. I mean, I already can, even Dr. Maria mentioned something about how with emotional situations we can have either positive or a negative, can't remember what she said, strong emotions, they can be either positive or negative, and how they prevent us from working most efficiently. And I always have a situation where I take several steps back, even after a positive experience, because it's been a situation indicative of strong emotions, and it just taxes my emotional body, so to speak. And so with something like this happening, where on so many different levels I feel impacted, it has really caused me to take multiple steps back, and I feel like my emotional body and my cognitive being has been short-circuited, so I'm trying to get my generators back up and running. That's what it feels like.
Well, and I think that's what it is like, but another thing I learned in one of the treatments was in conflict resolution, and that was to stay on point, because I would have a tendency to do that. You know, if an event would come up between me and another person, I'd start looking back at the whole history of the relationship and how the dynamics and the scales, you know, the weights and balances, and all of a sudden that one point, you know, like you said, that the one point that happened at that moment triggered so many different emotions that I almost, you know, come off the point of what started it and then go over the entire history of our relationship and bring that into it and try hard to just stay on this particular event, because like you said, there was a lot of good in your relationship. And no, I don't think you should be part of a lie, or it should be blamed on Allie didn't feel good and Mom stayed with her. I think, you know, honesty is a good thing, and that probably, you know, if that was clarified, you know, that there was a disagreement without even going into detail, but I don't think you need to take the heat and be complicit in a lie. That makes you feel worse, obviously, you know, but I hate it. I just want to smack people when they say this too shall pass. You have my permission to feel that way at me right now, you know, but it doesn't sting quite as bad, you know, as you decide to refocus, you know, put on a new pair of glasses and just go on to the next thing, you know, because I'm sure your sister is going about her life, doing her thing, and you're the one, you know, whose generator needs to be powered back up. And it is, it's exhausting, you know. One thing I can tell you about this cycle I've been on, this retaliatory cycle I've been on, I mean, I can almost visualize myself holding me with one hand by the back of the collar to not move forward and strangle someone figuratively and otherwise.
Someone to do, you know, the move and all the work that's being done.
Well, yeah, just a general feeling, like I'm sure you've all had a feeling at some time in your life where you feel like someone's gotten one over on you. And
yeah, sure. My contractors. Very frustrating.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, nobody likes that feeling. And my heritage, you know, my Italian, Irish heritage, my only child-ish, you know, there's so many, my isms, you know, there's so many things that play into that. Cannot stand that feeling of having someone get one over and visualize them gloating about it, and it has exhausted me to be thinking about that for days, because it happened already. You know, now one thing I am doing, and it isn't the contractors, it's something that happened after that, but, you know, I am seeking the counsel of an attorney to see, first of all, I got to check myself, you know, is it just about that, or is there some actual validity where there's something I can do about it? And if there is,
like, has there been a tort or an actionable wrongdoing that you can be compensated for?
Yes. And if that's the case, I will. But I brought up the other night, I think, to Les, I was saying, and this was a good point, you know, my husband also has been in recovery, and he said to me, you know, even though you're right, you know, even though you're right, you've been going through so many things, you know, this move has been a long process, and the things going on, health problems with your dad and with your grandma, and he was naming the different things that have been pretty heavy duty emotionally for even a person without a brain injury that have been going on. And he said, you know what, even though you're right, it was kind of one of those, is this the hill you want to die on thing? Because what he told me was he was really concerned about me because I'm not looking like I feel good. I've had headaches. I've been sleeping a lot more because I'm exhausting myself with my thinking. You know, I mean, I am torturing myself with my own thinking. You know, because I won't, my mind won't shut up, you know, and let it go.
Yeah.
And so, you know, when I was talking to you earlier about that, he said, I would rather pay the money, suffer the loss, and let it go than see you stay jazzed with your blood pressure up, going further down, 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 than you've been. And, you know, I was really grateful, you know, that someone cared and that somebody was paying attention. Now, I didn't like his answer because I had a myriad of yeah buts. Yeah, but, you know. You know, and so I did, you know, seek counsel, and then of course I had to say to him, hey, he said, and you know, he said, you know, whatever you decide to do, you decide to do, but just I want it on record, I said what I said, you know. And I thought about it today when I went to see my dad, and I did write everything I had to say to the attorney, and I just said, okay, that's what I've got. Let me know what you think. And I made the decision that whatever, you know, whatever it is, if there's even a hint, you know, that it's not something that I can pursue successfully, then I'm going to do everything I told you. I'm going to distract. I'm going to be doing double time in service for others. I'm going to recognize the fact that my routine of recovery that encompasses a number of different elements, I haven't been doing those for the last month. My routine has been completely interrupted by the force of the move, you know, the packing, the selling my house, the being with the contractors, the new house, you know. And you go back to the very basics of, you know, whoever that was that made up the stress scale a million years ago, who said, you know, major illness, deaths in the family, divorce, moves, changing jobs, you know, those are all the major stressors that are going to make you sick and cuckoo. And I'm up there, you know, three out of the top five, and it's been sustained for a while, you know. And what good, what fight is that going to be if I make something miserable continue out of something that's supposed to be a joy for us, you know, for us individually and as a couple? You know, our new home is something to be happy and joyful about, and something horrible happened here in the first 24 hours, and instead of focusing on that and milking that and being angry about that, because someone lied and got one over that cost us a ton of money and heartbreak from ruining something that was a lot of consideration going into it, you know, as well as money, a lot of heart going into it. You know, we do have a choice of what we decide to focus on, and I didn't used to think that, you know. I thought whatever way my mind went, that was the reality. You know, my mind is going this way, so that's the way I'm going to go. Well, you know, I can say, you know, when Dr. Maria was talking about putting your hand up, like, TMI, you know, and being your own policeman, you know, that I need to strongly consider, you know, what my husband said, and I didn't enough to drop it. Obviously, I wanted to run it by one more person, and almost, you know, on one hand, hope they say, you know, this is a really unfortunate thing, but chances are 70-30. It is unfair. It was unethical, but as far as illegal, it might cost you a lot of money, a lot more money, to not have it come out the way you want it to, and then have to make the decision, okay, this is time to let it go and enjoy what's good and get my life back, you know. And this week is the first week that I'm back on routine, you know. Tuesday and Wednesday I did, and tomorrow I'll do what I've been doing every week for the last 26 years, you know. I'll be reading my daily meditations that I haven't had time for, you know. I'll be going to meetings. Yesterday I went and visited my Nana after my meeting. I haven't seen poor Nana, who's, you know, dying because of the move and the contractors and the this and the that, you know. And so I made myself available instead of being into what I'm angry about. I made myself available, you know, at the meetings to my Nana, to my dad today, to my mom. You know, things are going on in other people's lives where I can be of service, and I'm not servicing me or them if I stay in this too long. You know,
And you could easily miss a blessing by getting lost in yourself from the hurt that someone has caused. I've had that happen myself, where someone had me hurt so bad that I'm thinking, man, I don't even want to go outside. I don't want people to look at me. I feel like I'm not worthy of being seen, and people have treated me so bad over the years. And you know, that's that, what she was talking, what'd you call it a while ago when you reverse your thought pattern? I always saw it just role reversal, but I don't know the proper term. You used it earlier.
Oh, I said action opposite emotion.
Action opposite. That's what I do
all
the time.
Yeah, powerful.
It is very powerful, because when I get a negative thought, I start trying to channel it away and start saying, okay, something bad is trying to happen. I'm not going to let it happen to the best of my ability, and I'll call somebody I know for one of my lifelines. Or I'll say, okay, I'm going to go volunteer and work with some people that I know that are even worse off than me. Or maybe a terrible migraine is coming on. I had one hit me really strong this evening. And, I mean, it was so powerful. It was like I felt the energy just sinking out of my body. And I just felt like, wow, I'm not going to be able to even make it to her show tonight or do anything. I was so fatigued. And I started saying, You're setting yourself up for failure. I heard my thought pattern saying it's going to happen. And so I started playing some music. I started sipping on a soft drink, and I started talking to people. And some people started laughing around me. And you know what? My emotions changed. The headache faded, and it eased off. I was also with someone tonight who had a high blood pressure reading, very high blood pressure reading. And it startled this person, and I said, let's take it again. And, you know, you're not supposed to take your blood pressure really close together, so I actually took mine, and mine was half decent. It was pretty good. And so I said, okay. I was looking at this is a real nice, modern blood pressure system in a store we were in, and this person was kind of startled. Their blood pressure was this high. I said, okay, I'm going to tell you something I noticed that you did. Your eyes were blinking, it's like you're upset before it started. I said, you see, there was a circle and a green light that would just go in a circle around it, and it had these green dots on it. I said, focus on just that circle and those green dots. And their blood pressure was much better all of a sudden when they took it. And they wouldn't claim that, but I said, I told you it'll work. And it was much better. And
you distracted them.
Yeah.
Brought
and
their
I was
attention
trying to
somewhere
do
else.
And sometimes we need a distraction when someone has done something terrible or someone has really upset us or disagreed with us or just bad-mouthed us or whatever in life it is. And, Allie, I'm just going to say it outright. We love you coming around here. You're awesome. I just want to say that to you.
Thank you.
I know when you're feeling
down.
Thank you.
I love being here. You guys
are
awesome,
really,
too.
We really like you here. I'm being honest. And when you're down, you know, we can try to lift somebody else up. We can try to lift you up. There might be a time when I'm down or Kim's down, you might be the one lifting us up. And that's all about the teamwork of the Survivors Network and Brain Injury Radio, because one person has a skill that someone might be silly. I'm full of silly. Sometimes people say, Les, will you ever grow up? Please grow up. My supervisor's daughter loves me to death because I'm so silly. I make silly sounds. I come up and say,
hello, how are you doing?
Stuff like that. And she says, stop, Dad. You want to make me laugh. I said, no, don't make me laugh. Quit making funny eyes at me. You're fired. I said, oh, no, you're going to go tell your mommy, my boss, to fire me again? Yes. Okay, Les Paul, come sit down, and I'll tell you what I did. I was talking to my boss about it today, and I'm not meaning to get you off subject, but I am at the same time, to get you thinking and seeing there are all kinds of other things out there that we don't realize. Okay, she handed me this, I don't know what you call it, something like Legos, and it's a structure you make, and you put them together, and they're all these different colors, and I was doing them wrong on purpose. And I was saying, she said, no, they have to be square, and these squares attach to each other, and you make a shape out of it, and it has to be long. She wanted it to be about the size of a one-foot, what do you call it, stick? I can't say it. Well, it wanted to stand about 1 foot high. And so instead of it being squares, I turned each one of the little squares slightly different from the other. And I said to her, I said, because of my brain injury, I can't see it unless it's slightly angled on each one of those. And she said, no, you don't. You can't see it that way. I said, that's the only way I can see it. And then she said, what do you mean? I said, some people with brain injuries see things like that. They view the world through a different lens. And she goes, Mommy, is he serious? And she was smiling, yes, he is. He's trying to teach you a lesson that sometimes we see something bad that happens and it hurts really bad, or someone does something that we can't figure out for the life of us to us or to someone we love, or hurts someone's feelings so bad that you can't stand it. And that's where in peer support, what we talk about, and at Walton Options where I work, where we talk about us, the survivor, the struggle being the biggest part of independent living. The struggle is what makes us survive it. And even if it is hard and it hurts, we try to work together and build those common bridges and alliances together so that we can make it together. And that's what I'm seeing in you, Allie. I didn't mean to take so long, but really I know you. I can sense the hurt in your voice, but, you know, we can work together as a team and come up with some solutions together, I hope.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you. I really do. And,
you're welcome.
Yeah, while you both were talking, what kept resonating in my mind is the question of, is the sizzle worth the steak, you know?
Yeah.
Sometimes it's not.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's
right.
not. And so sometimes, you know, we find ourselves at the crosshairs of this, you know, junction of this juxtapositioning of, is it about principle or is it about practicality, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so it's hard to know. It's hard to know which is the right way to venture. And I'm starting to think that at the end of the day, you have to assess, do I have sufficient resources, whether it be brain bucks or financially or emotionally, psychically. It almost really is a function of can I afford this fight? You know, can I afford to take this on, to, you know, take on this battle and lose sight of the fact that, not that I want to be about wartime, but it's like, you know, win the battle but lose the war.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And I think that's a really good point, because I know that each of us has overreached our mark more than once in our life, where we've thought we could handle it and have found out the hard way we can't. We've made ourselves sick one way or another, you know, either emotionally sick or got ourselves, our resistance so far down from wearing ourselves out so bad just by overstretching our reach. And, we've all done it, but boy, when you feel that coming on, that's the time to slam the brakes on and throw her in reverse, you know, go back the other direction, because I don't know, the older you get and the more you've done it, I'll speak for myself, you know, the older I get, the more I do that to myself or recognize that I've done that to myself, you know, there's just, like you said, you know, about the sizzle and the steak and the hill you want to die on, and what is more important, you know, do I need to be available to family members in need right now, or, you know, do I need to fight a dishonest person that hurt me, but I'm going to be okay, and karmically, I know it'll come back to them, you know, and I said the other night, the only thing that ticked me off is every now and then there's one that, it's one thing to know that karmically it will catch up with someone, but sometimes you want to be there to see it, damn it. That's where I was the other night. And, you know, I want to be the one doling
it
out,
you
know. I know. I want to meet that out. You know, I want to be the one to do that. But, you know, as each day has gone by, you know, and as I was up in the hospital today on the neurology floor, and it all kind of creeps me out. It was where I was, and I was sitting in the chair and looking out the window, and I could see the house across the street. I must have been in a room that was, well, it was obviously on the same side, but give or take a room from the one I was in must have been where I was eventually, because I remember seeing the house next door out the window. So I'm sitting there looking out the window, and I'm thinking, gee, yesterday it was the most important thing, you know, this house issue was the most important thing. And today, you know, I'm sitting there, and if I could trade the house to undo my dad's Parkinson's, you know, if I could have never had the house and missed having my brains blow up, you know, what's really most important? And then I'm not going to beat myself up for having human emotion either, you know, but I am going to have to know when to put on the brakes and reassess the situation and not go deeper into the hole, but slowly start backing out of it. And I got reminders of that, you know, by getting back into my routines this week. And so I know that that's a really important thing for me. And one of the things I told those people that were wondering about where I've been and that, you know, I said, well, I didn't give up all my commitments. You know, my show is about service, and I didn't, you know, the night before we were having the movers at 7:00 in the morning, we moved Thursday the 12th. I was on the air doing my show.
I don't know how you did all you did. I don't know how.
But it was important. It isn't like a pat on the back. It was about, I've got a number of routines that I let go, but I didn't let them all go. I hung on to this one, like you were saying, like my lifeline, because I knew I was letting the others slide, because those go on during the daytime, and my daytimes were very occupied with being behind packing and trying to be over here supervising workers. And so a lot of my routine, and I'm not an early person, I'm a night owl, not an early person, and so when I got up and had to hit the floor running, I was missing my daily discipline of getting up and reading a daily meditation and breathing before I start running, you know, when I get up, and having a more leisurely morning. But I was waking up every day, man, for 2 months at 100 miles an hour, and it was very helpful to get back into my routine. And I said, you know, I did. I'm not going to rationalize or justify. I did set my priorities at a place where the thing that's kept me somewhat sane and stable for a quarter of a century, you know, I put that on the back burner, and I rode on the insurance of the investment I've made in the past. But one thing that investment taught me was that I couldn't let go of all of it, you know, and this is service. This is something I really enjoy doing, but this is also service, and I made sure I did it and that I was here. You know, and there were nights, the last night and the first night, last night in the old place, first night in this place, you know, that I was really tired and was going to put on a tape, especially that first night in this one, because it was, you know, when stuff was hitting the fan here, you know, and I really wanted to put on a tape, and I thought, no, you know, okay, so you got to say half a dozen disciplines that you're very committed to, you've let five of them go, you know, do you want to completely let go of the life raft in the deep end and count on the fact that you're going to be able to swim? Well, no, I don't, because I've seen too many people do that and they drowned. And I wasn't prepared to make that decision right then.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm really grateful that our show is on late enough that the things that I missed during the day, I was still able to make this commitment and feel good about it, because there was a lot of things I wasn't feeling very good about as I was, you know, letting those recovery tools slide and going through a lot of pressure. You know, there were things I wasn't feeling good about, and this is something that I do feel good about, because I feel like if there's anything that, you know, just because I'm here and I unlock the door, invite some great guests, have some wonderful listeners that participate like you guys, that if that brings even a minute of comfort to anybody out there that's like I was for 17 years on my own, flying solo, then that's more important, you know, than the fact that I wanted to shut down all systems and just be into self. So anyway, well, with that, if you guys will hang on for just 1 minute, I know that everyone always wants to know, that Brain Injury Radio is on 7 nights a week. We've got a number of different hosts. We have the 5 o'clock Pacific hour and, is that right? Yeah. And the 7 o'clock Pacific time, and all these live shows are immediately archived for on-demand listening. Our hosts are from all over the country, and I know that from time to time when I say happy hump night from Middle America, that there's listeners out there saying, now where is that Middle America that she's always talking about? And this is how I usually answer. Oh, wait. No, it isn't. I did that before, didn't I, Les? And this is how I always answer. that would be the clue that you would all get about where Mid-America is. And I did an oops, and I started to play that unauthorized 50 seconds I've got to delete someday. But in any case, this is Brain Injury Radio. I'm your hump night host, Kim Justice, and this is Recovery Now. Tonight, my guest was Dr. Maria Romanis. She is a pathologist, and I just bet you the plan she was talking about is going back to neurology. She's not only a doctor, but a survivor of a traumatic brain injury from 1984 when she was in a terrible car accident, and she's been an overcomer and is quite an inspiration, and I am very fortunate that after I had her on the first time and we really hit it off and I thought had a really productive show and I got a lot of good feedback from the audience, Maria agreed to be a regular on my show and come every couple of months and talk to us about a different topic. And so I'm really blessed to have some great guests. And Javier that called, he was also a guest on my show, and he is wonderful as well. And I appreciate the regular listeners, those of you tuning in tonight, and those that support Brain Injury Radio. We hosts appreciate it, and we get as much, if not more, out of it, I think, ourselves than what we're trying to put out for you guys. So we really do appreciate it. Sometime this weekend, I'm going to be seeing our old buddy, and some of you that are friends of mine on Facebook saw the pictures of the new house, and in one of those pictures it showed a half-painted room, and John Cruise was in that picture, and he was doing the painting for us. And when we redid the basement and our catastrophe happened, we added a bathroom, and the last thing to be done before that happened, and we had to stop work before that so we could move in, John's going to be coming back to paint the bathroom in the now ruined, once finished lower level. But in any case, the bathroom's going to look really nice because he's going to be back painting for us this weekend. And it was really a joy, that part of moving. And I always try to look at the other side of the coin. And for the three clowns that I was dealing with, the person who was keeping me stable during that time, if you can say that, I did lose it a couple of times, but he laughed at me, and that really diffused it because I wasn't going off at him. And he's a Marine, served in Vietnam, and our friend who has an inoperable brain tumor, and he was there painting. And so now one of the blessings in my new home as I walk through it is this music that I'm going to play for, is that he was here in the live with his paintbrush and roller singing, and we were singing a little together one day. I told that story on a show one night, but it was a real pleasure to get to spend time. We kind of helped create a vision of his, and he was helping me create a vision of mine that turned out really nice, and it gives me a warm feeling, because if there is a dark feeling because of some deceit from the seller, there's a warm feeling because when we took over, in spite of this thing that happened, love came into this home, and it came into the home because of plans that my husband and I have for it, but also people like John Cruise who were here, who on the very first day when he came to work, he gave our house a blessing, and every day I see that blessing in the beautiful colors on the wall, and and they'll always be a part of John here in my home. And they'll always be a part of you guys here in my home. And that helps build the love and temper the anger. And that's a place I'd rather be. That's a thing I'd rather feel. And so I'm going to play a song of John's, and it always helps put things in perspective for me and gives me a lot of gratitude. This is John Cruz, John Cruz Blues. You can find him at, if you're on Facebook, facebook.com/John Cruz Blues, C-R-E-W-S, John Cruz Blues, or at his website, johncruzblues.com. Or if you want to buy, which I encourage you, he's got a lot of mounting VA medical bills from his tumor. And you can check him out at ReverbNation.com/John Cruz Blues. Buy a song or two, or be able to listen to songs when you want to, not just here on the show. But this is a little something for all of us to remember, and it's in the palm of our hand.
Of your hand, like a jewel
bless you, my friend. That was John Cruz. John Cruz Blues. And I see another buddy on here. What up, Alan?
Hi, Kim. Just checking in.
Well, I'm glad you did. I've seen you on here listening tonight. Are you working?
No, I'm just practicing my guitar. I practice my guitar while I'm listening to you guys.
You
do? I tell you what, I tell you what, that lady, the doctor, she was wonderful. The main word we should all listen to is discipline. That's
mm-hmm.
the hardest thing for me, is to really discipline myself to do things. Like today, I had a appointment, and I was going to go, but I slept right through it. Darn it. But I'm going to have to call the guy tomorrow and apologize. But the main thing is, instead of sleeping through it, I got to make my appointments.
Yeah.
The other day, also, I'm wondering if my head injury makes me, what's the word I'm looking for? React to things slower, because I don't know if I've told you this before, Kim, but I was walking and looking at the park, and I was looking to my left, and I tripped. And what happened was, I thought, while I was falling, that my hands would protect me and I could catch my fall on the ground, but it didn't. And I guess I hurt my sternum, is the body part they're talking about.
Ooh.
I tell you what, that thing is painful, with capital letters on all letters. And they
mm-hmm.
gave me ibuprofen 800 milligrams. I tell
Does
you what,
help?
I wonder if I didn't have my head injury, I would have put my hands in front of me to catch my fall. What do you think?
Well, I think that our reaction time can be slower, but for sure, I know mine is sometimes. And you know what Dr. Romanos was talking about earlier about attention, you know, you got distracted, you know, walking through the park. And so, you know, when you started to fall, you know, you were coming out of being distracted from something else, so that was going to slow up your reaction time, too. But that wasn't really anything that you could help. But I'm sorry you got hurt. Your sternum, that's the part that they press on doing CPR, isn't it, on your chest there?
Yeah, well, of course, I'm not a doctor. I don't know. That is the word for it, the sternum, right in the middle of your chest, right below your rib cage. And it's right in the middle, right below the rib cage. But I thought, when I was falling, I was thinking, you know, my hands should catch my fall. I don't have to worry. But I tell you, my hands didn't go out fast enough, and I fell right on that darn thing. I mean, right on it. And boy, does it. If I didn't take those 800 milligram ibuprofens, if you just softly touch it, it's just like pressing a button for, you know, the pain that blasts in my brain. It hurts like a son of a gun.
Oh,
but
I'm sorry.
That's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
Well, I hope you feel better soon. That's a tough place, and it'll probably take a little while to heal, but you keep playing your guitar, and I'm sure that makes you feel good. Are you thinking of you were in the recording studio the other night. Were you just with your friend hanging out, or are you going to be recording some new stuff yourself, or what?
Yeah, I'm recording right now as we speak. I mean, I'm practicing right now, but I'm recording a song this week. And
really?
When I get it done, you'll be the first to hear it. Me and Kyra are going to come to Omaha and take you to dinner, and I'll give you that CD.
Oh, neat. Well, you guys can come over and see the new house, too.
You know, I didn't think of that. You're correct. I think I could get a GPS always get lost in Omaha, so I get a GPS. We'll run right over there.
Yeah, either that or I'll meet you and you can follow me, and then you'll get to meet all my dogs.
Perfect. Perfect.
Awesome.
You know, I just want to say how grateful I am that you guys give us a voice, you and the doctor tonight, and you know, just like in our big book, the main word is discipline. We as people in recovery are undisciplined, and we got to remember to discipline ourselves, and that's a big word. Because like I said today, you know, I just slept right through my darn appointment, and tomorrow I got to apologize, and I've probably done that 100 times since my fall.
Mm.
So I'm, I get people mad at me.
Well, again, you know, it's progress, not perfection, and yes, we have to work on our discipline, and we can't use an amends as an excuse to continue certain behaviors, but it is good
exactly.
that you made the amend, you know, that's progress.
Not yet. Tomorrow I will. I haven't yet. Tomorrow
okay,
I
well,
will.
Now you've made a commitment to all over the United States and 36 countries live and on demand, so you're going to have to do it now, man.
Today I was playing the piano, and I was at this place where people eat and everything, and this lady, usually they serve people, but today they had a buffet, and they were talking to each other, and the lady says, tell Alan to quiet down a little bit because we can't hear each other. When I heard that, I thought, well, I'm not going to listen to those guys. But after I calmed down a little bit, I thought, well, you know, I got to cool it because, you know, I'm not the boss here.
Yeah, that really stinks, doesn't it?
So I cooled and played a little softer, but you know, I really enjoy playing for those guys. So I just I settled down a little bit. Usually I don't sing that loud either, you know. So I just got carried away a little bit.
Well, that's okay. You were just real spirited today. That's all right.
Exactly. Yep. Exactly.
It happens. Hey, if you could be spirited when you had an owie sternum, then what the heck?
But I just want to thank you guys for giving us TBIers a voice, and that person that came on tonight, what a miracle. I mean, a doctor, did she get her doctorate after she got injured?
Yeah, she did.
Wow. Because I flunked one course going to a community college, and the next time I took it, I got a C. They were computer courses. I really liked it, but, you know, she was saying, you know, you get an overload, and
right.
It's hard to study. So you got to give her a lot of credit for getting a doctorate. I mean, I got to salute her.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
I do, too, and that's why... It's funny, whenever I, you know, introduce her as Dr. Maria Romanis, and she's a doctor and has an additional PhD, you know, she tells me, just call me Maria, and I say, you know, that's cool for you to just be Maria, but I think you should be recognized for what you've done. And when you were talking about what you were, you know, she was originally studying to be a doctor of neurology. And after her brain injury, that became burdensome because of the hours that she was going to have to take her classes. And so it didn't work out, and she wound up going into pathology, which is no lightweight stuff either. You know, she's in charge of diagnosing whether or not you have cancer. You know, she's works in oncology as a pathologist, and so pretty heady stuff in and of itself, but what she had wanted to do and what she was training to do, she wasn't able to go back to that, which ironically, was neurology, and then she would have a brain injury, and that would take her away from the study of neurology. But when she was saying earlier in the show that she had something she'd probably talk to me about sometime, but she had an opportunity she was considering, I know that she's wanted to go back to neurology and, you know, be a doctor of neurology, and I'll bet that that's probably in the opportunity that she was talking about and a shift that she'll make. And her accident was in 1984, and so that interrupted her study of neurology, brought her over to pathology, but now, you know, she's been 13, 14 years being a pathologist, and I think she might just be ready to go back and be a doctor of neurology. And isn't that going to be insightful now that she's been a brain injury survivor for all this time and around, you know, the medical model, that she's going to be a neurologist out there with a different insight than most neurologists because she's a survivor herself of a neurological brain event and still able to go into that field. So yeah, I'm really proud of her for her discipline and determination to go after what she wants, and her brain injury slowed her up, but it didn't stop her, and she's still moving forward. And so it's always a pleasure to have Maria on the show, but I'm glad you enjoyed her.
Well, God bless her forever. And you know, I tried going back to school, and it didn't work for me, flunking and then getting a C, but I enjoyed the experience. Just to qualify myself, I got my 15 minutes of fame when I fell off the bridge by accident, construction accident, and they showed my boots going into the ambulance.
Oh, so God.
There was a TV reporter there. I don't know how they got there so fast, but as a lady reported on me as my feet were going into the ambulance. Everybody wants to get famous, get on TV, but my boots got famous and not me. But anyways, when I was out in ICU, I think ICU, it could have been the ambulance, a voice or whatever it was came to me. Of course, I was out. I wasn't thinking. It's not your time to meet the Creator. So here I am. I'm meant to be here for some reason.
Yes,
but
you are.
So I thank the good Lord that I'm here today and present.
Me too. I do too. Well, I see my clock is running down, but I wanted to make sure to say hello because I saw you there, and I'll be looking forward to hearing from you soon. And tell Kyra hello, and
okay,
we'll be in touch.
God bless you, and God bless all you TBIers. Be with God, and keep going in the right direction. Bye-bye.
Bye, Alan. That was Alan Kitto. He's also one of the great indie musicians on the playlist. I want to encourage you all to check out braininjuryradio.org. This is a goal for me that I put off when I had too many things going, and I thought it was going to be hard to learn something new. And so admittedly, with my full basket, I have put it off, and Les assures me that it's something I'm going to be able to do, and that the quality of sound and the great music I play is going to be even better. We'll all be transitioning over there eventually. Don't panic. We're not going to be gone from Blog Talk Radio. But if you want better quality sound and you want to be ahead of the game as we make the shift, do go to braininjuryradio.org. Make sure you get yourself a username and password and write it down somewhere. You're not going to lose it, whatever you do, because that was the mistake I made in the beginning. And youch, I lost my username, and you can't get that back. You can get your password back, like when you forget that other places, but the username's a toughie. So make sure you get a username and password at braininjuryradio.org and do something familiar you're not going to forget and write it down someplace that you'll remember to find it, that's for sure. I want to thank you all for being here tonight, participating, again, supporting me, supporting Brain Injury Radio. And yes, Les Paul says a much higher quality sound at braininjuryradio.org. So he's throwing down the gauntlet. I'm throwing down the gauntlet. So you guys are all doing it. I'm going to have to get on the shtick now that my drama's kind of pretty much over, or at least I have room to learn this new skill now. So I'm going to see if I can't remember my username and password and do what I should be doing, which is moving forward to our new technology, which, you know, has been a little intimidating for me. But if Les says I can do it, I'm thinking I can. And that means that you guys can too. So we got 90 seconds, so those of you who aren't on the line are going to get cut off, but I am going to say, close with, this is something that I believe that we all have. It's Leah West again with Guardian Angel. And God bless you, and remember, no matter what you're going through, you're not alone, and your Guardian Angel is always right there by your side. Good night, everybody. We'll see you next week.
Little baby up in heaven, says to God, do I really have to go? And God replies, yes, it's your time to leave, but don't you worry, it won't be